Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hey, everybody. It is the first All Talk edition of The Social for 2021. Cynthia and Jess will be joining the show a little bit later. But first, let's welcome our first two guests of the show, not strangers to us, indeed, Bell Media development producer joining us all the way from Florida. She's also a speaker and an author. Trey Anthony is back. And not only is he also an author, he's also the West Coast editor of Time Magazine. Sam Lansky is back from L.A. Sam, Florida for Trey. Welcome and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
It's great to see you both, and we are going to kick this show off in a sexy way. Let's talk about whether or not it's a good idea to hook up before breaking up. An article in Big Think is talking about how it's not unusual for some people to get intimate before completely walking away from a relationship. Some people think that this is therapeutic. Others say it means that you're just prolonging the heartache and making it more difficult to walk away. What do you think? Breakup sex, yes or no?
Yes, definitely. I've done my share.
With enthusiasm.
I've done way too much breakup sex. And it's good because you go out with a bang, right? And then it can kind of confuse you a little bit.
Literally.
Yes. But I'm all for it. Why not? Just remember the good times.
Okay, but Trey, can I poke and prod a little bit? Because, like, are you doing it because you know, all right, this is the last hurrah, let's, you know, fine. Or are you doing it with any kind of secret hope that somebody might change their mind about the breakup?
Definitely not. It's the last hurrah. And for me, sometimes great sex is the only thing that held us together. So I'm like, let's go out with a bang. Let's just do this one last time. I'm good. I hope none of my exes are watching.
I have to respect Trey's POV here and the courage of her convictions. I'm very impressed. I think that breakup sex is sometimes a good idea, but I think, you know, we can do whatever we want. You got to be prepared for the fallout because sometimes it just rubber bands you right back into the middle.
Yeah, that's the question, because I feel like it probably serves different purposes for either different relationships. Like if you've been in a casual situation and then you're like, you know what, I'm going to break this off. But if you've been in a long-term situation, that could be. And then, like, I'm always curious if you think it leaves you stronger afterwards or weaker afterwards.
Yeah, I think that it can be complicated depending on the person. I just want to go to Beverly, who seems to be alluding to that. Beverly said on Facebook, you can't get over someone if you're under them. Thank you, Beverly. That is
very wise.
That is succinct and saucy and descriptive. But I would have to disagree with Beverly, at least in my case, because I think that, you know, Beverly's saying that you can't get over someone if you're under them. And I, for me, in the past, breakup sex has solidified it for me. Like, it is the thing that has made me be like, yep, good decision. I'm over it. I'm often disgusted after breakup sex. I am disgusted with myself. Why did you do that? And so it's a confirmation for me anyway that, yeah, you moving on is the right thing.
I think this is a really
smart take. Okay, it's interesting because...
I really agree with this. I think sometimes the breakup sex is the affirmation you needed that it wasn't that bomb to begin with.
Yes, right? And you're like, there's better sex out there and better person.
Yes.
And I will say it depends maybe on if it was casual or long term. And I say that because there was somebody, you know, eons ago that I was just sort of dealing with casually. And then I realized that I was falling in love with somebody else. And I was like, no, this I need to end this. And it was like, and that was all that we had. And so, you know, really, in one way, it was dangerous to go back for one last hurrah, as you say, Trey, because that kind of was the only tie that bonded us. But then you realize how empty it was when you have found true love and what making love is. Lainey's barfing. What making love is versus like having just sex. So that's kind of what solidified. I know she's like, this, making love. But it truly did make a difference in that moment to be like, okay, yeah, I'm done with that. Bye-bye. And that's what that last hurrah did for me in that case.
I think also, too, I'm not playing. and not playing into the stereotypes of women being more emotional, but as someone who's been in a same-sex relationship, I think sometimes too, for me, why I stay away from the breakup sex is because I think as women, to women, sometimes we get too much into the processing of it afterwards. And I don't want to get into the processing. I'm just like, we had a good time. Right, it's done. Let's call it a day. Right. So, but I find sometimes women want to process with me and I'm like, do we really have to do that today? Right. So I don't want to play into the stereotype, but I do find we talk it out way more as women.
I'm really happy and excited to announce no man has ever tried to process with me.
Oh, no. See?
Ever. Ever.
You see, God, it sounds like a nightmare the way you're both describing this. Oh, my Lord. Okay, listen, I want to move on to another topic. We all know and love Zendaya, and we think, I'm sure, she's quite lovely. But recently in a GQ magazine article, she actually said, hey, some people in her circle said, you probably should work on your personality a little bit because people think you're a little bit cold, maybe moody. And she said in the article, no, I'm just really shy and I'm not really good at conversation. And it kind of brought up this idea of how important is it to us, to all of you, how other people perceive you? And are you maybe being misunderstood and you just didn't know it?
I thought this was so interesting. You know, I've worked with a lot of high profile people and often they do kind of have a guard up. And I eventually figured out it was just really about kind of protecting their energy. You know, when you're in a position like the one that Zendaya is in, you have so much coming at you all the time. And so I think it's very natural to get kind of armored just because there are so many people who kind of want to take and take. For me personally, you know, I think like, as I move through the world, I want to try and be open, but I also don't have that much coming at me 24 hours a day. If I had people asking me for pictures, if I had people wanting favors all the time, wanting things from me, I think I'd probably shut down a little bit more.
True. Very true.
Yeah. And it's Britney Spears' famous song. You want a piece of me?
And I think sometimes people can really be misunderstood. Like my mother has like constant resting face. And people always think that she is not a nice person or she's mean. And she's one of the nicest people. But I usually say to my mom, Mom, fix your face. Like, and she doesn't even realize like that's how her face is, right? So I think sometimes you have to give people the benefit of the doubt. Because I'm telling you, my mother always looks like she's mad at somebody.
It depends, Trey. Lainey maybe gets that.
It depends, though, Trey, because some people have that resting face and they mean it, which is me. I will say that I am not a warm person. I'm not overly friendly, and it doesn't bother me that people characterize me as not warm or friendly. I'm totally okay with it. But I think it bothers the people around me more who are close to me, like. Yes, like my husband is when we're out in public and someone might say, oh, hey, I've seen you on the social. I shut down and I keep walking. And he always says to me, I want to die when I'm out in public with you with how like cold you are. And I'm like, well, sorry, you chose me. What do you want me to do? And someone when we're out with like Mel and Cynthia, who are so nice and warm, the co-hosts of the show, they're always the one overcompensating for my lack of friendliness. Mel will step in when I like shut down. She'll be like, and how about those Leafs? And so I feel bad for the people around the RBFs like me.
It's so funny. I was curious to see, like, it's, you know, Lainey, you're a bit of an anomaly in many ways because I always feel like, is this a female conversation? Like, I don't know that people are running around and telling, like, George Clooney or Brad Pitt, you should really work on your face, fix your face because people think you're cold. And yes, we know that women, we have, like, a pleasing problem, right? I know I do. True. And you're raised to be the nice girl, raised to be the people pleaser because I just don't hear the same conversations happening, even with little boys. I hear my friends with their sons, and I hear my friends with their daughters, and it's very different conversations about smile, go give your uncle a hug, be nice. Oh, that's so rude. You just don't hear that with boys. It's like, well, he's off in his own world, and off goes Johnny. So that's the part for me that's really problematic.
So listen, we've got Sam in Los Angeles, Trey is in Florida. So we want to hear your take on this next story in the United States with all of this political turmoil. Is calling for unity and coming together, is that the right call right now? You've got Republican politicians like Ted Cruz or Lindsey Graham, who have historically supporters of Donald Trump, and they are the ones leading the charge saying, let's come together now. Is that the appropriate approach after everything that's been happening there in the last week, last 4 years?
I think for me, it depends on who is giving the message. I think if it was Biden or Harris saying, let's come together, I'd be like, yes. Because I think that's what they ran their platform on, is unity. I'm a little bit skeptical and hesitant when I hear Republicans talking about let's come together, because I just don't think it really is sincere. I think it's because right now they're really scared. I think it's because of what Trump has done. And so now they're all kind of like, oh, let's all forgive and forget. But I can't help but think about when the Black Lives Matter protesters were out there, how they were treated. Nobody was talking about forgive and forget at that time. So I'm really looking at who the message is coming from and who gets to be forgiven and who gets to say, oh, let's unite.
Mm-hmm. I think that's beautifully said. Mm-hmm. And it's also a question of why they're saying it, not just who, but also why. I think the calls for unity at this moment are about circumventing, holding accountable the people who have helped cause all of this turmoil. For me, the quickest path to unity, the straightest line between here and unity, is justice, is holding people accountable for their misdeeds.
Yeah.
And people who willfully propagated disinformation should be held accountable. That, to me, will bring us back together as a nation, not ignoring the fact that people have done that.
Exactly, Sam. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true, Sam. And the thing is, I do think that, you know, healing and unity can be a separate conversation from a de-escalation of tensions. I think that you can call for everybody calm down. Let's, you know, make sure that the emotions are not as high as they were, especially last week, considering that oftentimes no good decisions are made in like the heat of emotion. But it doesn't mean that you can, as Trey was saying, you have to be like forgive and forget and healing. And it reminds me of a conversation that was happening a couple of years ago. You guys remember where there was this call for civility, where certain Republicans and certain white nationalists were either being thrown out of restaurants and booed walking down the street. And people were like, where's the civility? And civility sometimes is code for proper etiquette that has been dictated to us by the ruling class from generations before, where you're not supposed to speak out against injustices. Civility often, covers and smooths over the injustices that, Sam, you were talking about. Why should someone who's been oppressed be civil to their oppressor, right? And this healing and unity thing is part of that conversation.
Yeah, you know what? I love that you said that, because I think going back to your point of both of you, Sam and Trey, also, it's like, who is saying it and why are they saying it? And when you look at the leaders and you look at what Trump has done and his rhetoric over the last 4 years versus what Joe Biden ran on and Kamala ran on, it really is that our leaders are supposed to be aspirational. They are supposed to inspire us to want to be our best selves. That is what a good leader, I think, does. It really speaks to that part of you. We all have our shadows. We all have our demons. But which one, to go back to an old Cherokee proverb, you know, that saying of there's two wolves inside of you, the good and the evil, and which one wins? It's the one that you feed. And Trump has been shoveling the wolf that is evil. And so the fact that that has been his go-to for 4 years, plus, you know, peaking with last week's Capitol siege, and you look at Kamala and Joe, and that they've been feeding the good wolf, because that is what I think good leaders do. So Trump can't turn around, and all of his minions, they can't turn around now and say, you know, we've thought about it, and we're going to start feeding the good wolf. No, you've been 4 years of this mess. So let's go back to, when you talk about civility, Lainey, let's go back to leaders being inspirational and aspirational to speak to the best of us, not the worst of us.
Yes.
I think that's beautifully put. And I feel like it's incumbent on all of us to reject calls for unity with people who would seek to dehumanize others or strip them of their rights. Like, you know, that is the idea that we should all just come together with people who are really committing kind of egregious harm is not unity, that's complicity. You know, that's turning a blind eye to cultures that are really harmful and damaging to the fabric of this democracy and to society at large. So I think we have to push beyond the kind of convenient and politically expedient call for unity to say, you know, where are our lines that we need to hold about what's acceptable to us and what isn't?
It's a lot to think about, especially as we head into the final weekend of the Trump administration. All right, let's move on to something that could be also divisive, but in a different way, perhaps a less alarming way. Let's talk about style, but refrigerator style. The BBC is reporting that there's a rising trend in bespoke refrigerators. So you can get them in different colors, in different materials. You can have special compartments like for sushi and kimchi and wine. Would you be interested in a custom fridge?
Would I be stoked if I walked into my dream house and there was like a really dope fridge there? Yes, 100%. I'm not going to turn down the super cool fridge. I will say,
you sounded really impatient there, though, Sam.
That's fair. No, I have a little bit of weariness about this. I will say, you know, I think. It feels like, you know, every week there's news of a new, totally ridiculous consumer product. You know, yesterday I was reading this article about the $3,000 doggy door. I don't know if you have heard about this, that was just unveiled. And I was like, you know, I respect the need for new consumer goods. At the same time, can some of these people in big tech work towards some more pressing solutions? You know, like, I'm thinking pandemic, I'm thinking homelessness, I'm thinking global hunger. Like, you know, could we redirect
maybe
a fraction of the resources from the crazy cool new fridge?
Well, the crazy cool new fridge could be tackling, I think, potentially a real problem. Like, I don't need a kimchi department, but I do want to reduce food waste. And here's the one thing that Canadians have on Americans. We're one of the worst when it comes to food wastage. Up to 40% of what we buy as a country ends up back in landfill, not even in compost. Like, we got problems, Canada. So if my fridge is so smart that it gives me an alert when my produce is going, it scans all my best before dates and it gives me alerts that you got to use this. And then it even spits out recipes like, oh, parsley's going. How about this recipe? Oh, looks like your bell peppers are going. How about this recipe? Like, that actually tackles a real problem. Wine is not a real problem. Maybe.
I think I would want a smart fridge. My smart fridge needs to tell me, stop buying bag salad that you know you're damn well not going to eat. That's all I want my smart fridge to do. I'm always throwing out the bag salad. And I just think that's what but I would love to have a customized fridge. I'm currently house hunting. And every single time I go into a house, if it doesn't have stainless steel appliances, I'm like, nope, this is not my house. This is not for me. So I didn't think I was that girl.
Trey.
Yes.
Trey, you are so stylish. Like, look at you. What about like really bright, colorful fridges? This is a trend. My husband's a contractor and more homes that he's doing, they want bright, colorful appliances like this.
That's what exactly the fridge I want.
Yes.
That's sexy.
I want that.
That's sexy.
Yes. That's sexy.
That fridge.
I love that. I love it.
Sam thinking less of me, because I am one of those people contributing to the demise of civilization, Sam. I want that fridge and I want that doggy door. Can you please message me the website address of that $3,000 doggy door? I'm very interested. not in the price tag, but
Listen.
How I can like make my husband do it for free.
No shade. I too watched Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and saw Yolanda's fridge and lost my mind. So I get it. I get it. I get the widespread appeal. There it is.
Yeah. Wow.
I have fridge envy.
That can't be real.
I have fridge envy.
Ooh. Yeah. That's
I love that.
Hashtag staging. Hey, Trey, I want to dive into something with you because you have got a new book out called Black Girl in Love with Herself, A Guide to Self-Love, Healing, and Creating the Life You Truly Deserve. And you say that this is a self-help book that you wish that you had when you were younger. So give us a little snippet of what's in this that you wish you had ages ago.
For me, it's all about just really identifying what are the unique situations around and the barriers that impact Black women in seeking help. So I dive into, you know, the strong Black women trope. How do we deal with that? Why are some Black women really resistant to therapy? How do our mothers teach us not to be vulnerable? And so it really is looking at a lot of the systemic barriers that happen for Black women in the workplace as well. But of course, because of my comedy background, there's definitely a lot of humor in it. There's a memoir piece to it. I talk a lot about growing up as a West Indian, Jamaican, Canadian in there. And so it's a lot of fun and really transparent and just really honest.
Mm. Love that. Wonderful. Congratulations. We hope everybody goes out and gets it. Trey and Sam, what a pleasure as always. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us now from Toronto is a radio personality and spoken word artist, Gemini. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back to the Soch. Now that I've been on before, I feel like I can,
We are so delighted to have you back. And we are also delighted to have join us music, culture, journalist, and critic, Juana Thompson. Welcome to the show, Juana.
Yay. Thank you so much for introducing me. That was so lovely. Hey, everyone.
Hey. So we can't wait to get both of your takes on this first story. So Black Eyed Peas star will.i.am, he struck a chord recently when he said that he feels kind of hurt when the band is not considered a Black group, and he thinks it's in part because of their international success. So what did you make of his comments around this?
First of all, how dare you? Common sense, like first and foremost, if he was to say people don't consider him Black because of the music he makes, okay, I understand. But the band, even without, let's even not put Fergie in. The band without Fergie, you are Black and the other two members are not Black. I believe one is First Nations, the other is a Filipino man. So how would that make you Black? And then the other person that you had in, the other singer, a female Black woman, Kim, you got rid of her. And then replaced her with a white woman and then put the focus on the white woman. First of all, I've got to say to Kim, she is such a queen. She handled it with grace. Her response, first she let her 10-year-old son speak. And when the children speak and say, why would I consider you a Black group? I thought you were this pop group. I don't even, like, he was actually shocked when she played him their early stuff. And the thing that you want us to remember you for, you don't do that music anymore. It's a completely different genre. So why would we consider you that? And then to me, the biggest insult was he said the time that the Black Eyed Peas started, and it was after Kim had already been in the group. So you talk about this erasing of Black women's contributions as if she didn't exist and the group did not exist. She was going on tour. They made records. How dare you? Even if you want to downplay her contribution, to act like she didn't exist is actually disgusting. And then ask for our love and support from other Black women and men when you go and erase the contributions of another Black woman. It's horrible.
I totally agree, Gemini. I think when we think of the Black Eyed Peas...
I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Oh, sure. Yes. I totally agree. I think when we think of the Black Eyed Peas, we have to go back to the very origin. They are making urban music similar to Common's and the Mos Defs of rap and hip hop. But there comes their 2000 and I believe their 2004 or 2003 album, Ella Funk. And that featured the massive hits, Let's Get It Started. That was the NBA 2004 official anthem. It was featured in so many different commercials. It was all over the place, essentially. They even won a Grammy in 2005 for the best rap song performance for that. So I think we really have to consider, they made a major shift to more EDM house genre, which we love house. Black people created house music. So it's not a problem there. But I think with Fergie's entrance into the group, it really did put the group into a different direction. A lot of people accuse Fergie of culture appropriation, rightfully so. It was similar to the Gwen Stefani's when Gwen Stefani came with Holla Black Girl. Then she had the Harajuku Girls where everyone was like, whoa, what are you doing? So I do think Fergie...
I'm curious.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I totally understand everything you're saying, but I'm curious about what you think about the record executives part in this, because, you know, I watched that documentary with Kim Hill. And if you haven't seen it, it's a New York Times documentary. It's part of an Almost Famous series. And Kim Hill, she is such a queen. She's so beautiful. And she tells the story of how, you know, she met these guys when she was, an up and coming artist, and they, you know, brought her into the group. And it was a really like a love letter in a way to the beginning of that relationship. And then you had these record executives who started increasingly asking her to like grind up on Will I Am and dress increasingly sexy. And she was the one who was like, I can't do this. This goes against myself. I don't feel good about this. And so she left the band. And so to me, this is part of the story is also what the record executives decided that Black Eyed Peas would be. I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
Oh, 100%. That's why when I noted that they won a Best Rap Grammy, that doesn't make any sense. They weren't making rap music, quote unquote, rap music during that part. It was more so shifting towards EDM and also house music, like I mentioned. And I have no problem with house music that's created by Black people, but I do think that with Fergie's interest, like you stated, record executives, they always give, you know, they always push like a white, say, pop or R&B artist to the forefront. And to be honest, shameless plug here, I created the word blackfishing, and it's always someone that's culture appropriating and presenting like they are a bit urban when their origins do not suit that. So I do think that when we say the record executives, they have a huge, massive part to play. There's a reason why we have been seeing a lot of people like Miley Cyrus, you know, when she did the whole bangers era, and she had her image changed completely from her Disney image. So, you know, it's a replication of a lot of non-ambiguous, but also Black people. Yeah. So I'm not surprised. I believe that the record labels have a huge part to play and how images are crafted. And sadly, a lot of Black women are ripped off when it comes to that.
Can I just give love for blackfishing the term? Because that was amazing. Blackfishing is everything. And even when it comes to the record labels, I totally agree that they have such a huge part to play, but Will and the other members of the group also still have to take ownership that they allowed that to happen. Because some of the other groups that he wanted to be loved and compared to in the same way the Black community uplifts them, I am sure those groups have also had record labels say, hey, what if you brought in a white girl? Hey, what if you tried this music? Hey, what if you went EDM? And those groups maybe... to their bank account's disappointment, but our love is still there. And, you know, their pride in who they are probably said no. And the Black Eyed Peas said yes. And there's nothing wrong with that. But then you don't get to cry, you know, as you're taking out your huge checks from the bank.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I wonder if Will.i.am said what he said because sort of subconsciously maybe the alternative, which could be the reality, would have like been really, really painful that your fans, as you guys are saying, your fans turned away from you, your Black fans turned away from you because of those changes that you made, replacing Kim, changing the style of your music. They lost interest. Like it's kind of seems to be like, you don't want to say that he made this situation happen, but it kind of sort of seems like, you know, you made the bed, now sleep in it kind of deal. But I'm curious to know if you two, because you guys have both written about music, you've interviewed so many different people, would you guys have pushed back on Wyclef, who was interviewing Will.i.am, like after he said it as journalists? Like, or would you have just, I don't know, let him go on?
I think Wyclef should have pushed back because, as Kim said, she was there and he was there at the same time. So he is aware that she was there. He's aware that those numbers don't make sense. He could have even referenced it. At least, again, it doesn't have to be hateful, but at least reference, well, what about this change? Or even when he said the group started after she was already in the group and Wyclef was there. But Wyclef also has a bit of the same problem. Sometimes he's more loved, but I think he didn't want to talk about it because he's also went into a different direction. So he probably was like, let me just step out of this before you guys turn to me. Because, you know, that's how social media works. They go, if you say something, they'll say, well, what about you? What about your songs?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't expect another celebrity or musician to hold another musician you know, accountable for this. I expect the fans, the listeners, those on the internet, and they did just that. Twitter was ablaze,
yeah.
Trending topics, people were cutting into them, rightfully so. And Kim, I believe, got some justice because people were really vouching for her. They were spreading clips of her talking about her experience in the group. So I'm very happy that Twitter, once again, and social media did their job. I love it. I love it here.
Okay, guys, this next topic seems simple, but I think it's kind of complicated. How long do you have to live somewhere to say you're from there? According to Jezebel, 2 to 4 years is the standard requirement. But what do you think, Juana?
Well, here's my understanding on it. When someone asks me where I'm from, the first thing I'm going to do is say I'm from Trinidad. My parents, you know, my mom came from Trinidad when she was 14 to Canada. But when someone asks again, I'm like, you know what? Okay, fine. I'm from Toronto. I've been living in Toronto my whole life. But I do think, yes, but I do think that when it comes to claiming a location, for me personally, there's two things that matter. I believe context is one, and also the length of time. So with context, someone may be fleeing maybe possibly a war torn country. They want to forget, you know, the origin of where they come from and really put their, you know, sink their teeth in the new location they're at. And like, you know, they want to say, I'm from Canada, I'm from Toronto, which is completely fine. But for me, context and just length, I wouldn't claim anything, maybe 2 to 3 years. I'm more comfortable if I'm like settled in, I'm exploring the place, I know the ins and outs, I know the intersections and all that stuff. So I think it depends on the person for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think context is so important. I also think it's when did you move or live there? So if I've been somewhere in my formative years, so if that's where you started to become an adult, if that's where you start to become a teen, that's where you your music tastes develop. I'm not comfortable with 2 to 4 years either. I was more of a 7 to 10er. But I was putting an example of a friend of mine. He's a producer. His name's Steve in New Jersey. And he really considers himself a Torontonian. And that's because every year since he was a kid, and especially in those years that were important to him as a teen, he spent his summers here with family members. Oh. He knows Toronto better than I do. He corrects me on streets. He will not miss a Caravana where I might. But that is a part of who he is. That's his music taste. His food taste was all developed here.
You know what's funny is I've been in Toronto for 23 years, and if someone stops me and says, when we used to be out in the streets, if someone stops me and says, hey, excuse me, are you from here? I'm like, oh, no, I'm from a little town about 2.5 hours southwest. They're like, no, I just want to know where the subway is. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can help you with that.
That's hilarious.
I mean, I obviously this is, I think, on everyone's top of mind because a couple of weeks ago, everyone was talking about Hilaria Baldwin and, you know, the fact that she was suggesting, or there's a lot of evidence to suggest that she believed and told people this narrative that she was from Spain, and she is, in fact, not from Spain. And so I understood why people were, Twitter was ablaze as a result of this. But at the same time, I was kind of like, oh, my gosh, there's so many bigger things in the world to worry about, especially in the context of this. That was my particular feeling about that at that particular time. I don't know. I think it's a layered and nuanced kind of conversation, who we are, where we're from, and what it all means. And we're not going to be able to fix that all today.
Would you have a problem with your parents maintaining a relationship with your ex? The Atlantic spoke with a woman who has been secretly best friends with her ex's, with her son's ex-girlfriend for the past 30 years. How would you feel about this, Juana, if this happened?
Well, it did happen. I think that are important. And it's so funny, whenever I come out of a relationship, I don't really stay friends with exes. I like to part my ways and, you know, we go our separate ways. I don't see the necessary thing for friendship afterwards. Maybe just me, maybe I'm the problem. Hey, who knows? But my mom and my family, they stayed friends with one of my exes. They would go to his events. They would text him. They would call him, everything. So I had to go to them and say, hey guys, boundaries exist. Please do not talk to him. And, you know, they still went behind my back and did it anyways. But I think the key is to talking to them first. You have to understand why they're doing. Maybe they, you know, they said they love them. They're a great dinner party guest. But I do think if you're the person in that, like, you know, in that situation, it's definitely a good thing to go talk to the parents or the family that's definitely interrupting on your boundaries.
Well, Nancy on Facebook wrote and said, "We share children, so we don't act like children. My parents always invite him over for celebrations. We just had a large snowfall here, and he went over to shovel their driveway and deck before I could." I mean, Nancy, that sounds idyllic and amazing, but I don't think that that's possible for everyone for sure. I think there's like a kind of formula, like it matters the length of time, plus kids, mm-hmm. plus the nature of the breakup. Don't you think? Like, Gemini, yeah. like, don't you need, yeah?
Completely. I think it matters why you broke up. I think it matters how the person treated you. You know, there are people who have split up because they were being abused by that partner. So by the parents being friends, you're condoning that behavior. Or are you even frightened? Do you feel uncomfortable around that partner? But like, you know, some people said it's okay. I just don't really want anything to do with them, but I don't mind if the parents know. I think in the story we were talking about, she said her kid is kind of a jerk. So she's obviously reaching for something, some kind of friendship that she's not getting from them. I was saying earlier that my parents, my grandmother has always said, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother on my mother's side, my mom always tells me, if I divorced your father, she's picking him. It's known. It's that's just what it is. You know, and it also matters how long has that person been a rep? Has he been in the family's life for 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
He's a part mm-hmm. of the family, but mm-hmm. a new guy. And listen, Juana, for me, I don't introduce them. You got to be, Ooh. You know, we got to be married 6 years. Then you'll meet my parents. You
know? I love that.
That's a good technique.
Yes.
That's a good technique. Yeah. Let's leave the last word to Sprites Tempest on Twitter. She says, "I have a huge issue with my parents and sister remaining friends with my ex-husband. We broke up for a reason. There were no children. He gets his family. I get mine. Back off."
Okay. Well, this next topic is like a scene right out of the movie Clueless. So if you're tired of rummaging through your closet in the morning to pick out outfits, there's an app for that. Basically, there's many apps that will work for you. The writer at The Kit says all you have to do is you upload pictures of your clothes and then you are given back a list of curated looks. Would you digitize your closet?
I would definitely do this. I feel like for the last year, I've worn like 10% of what's in my closet, mostly because I forget what's in there. And I mean, this is a true story. Just last week, I was watching a whole bunch of like period movies and period TV shows. And I was like, you know what I need? I need a Victorian nighty. And I spent like 2 hours, as one does, searching the internet for a Victorian nighty. Couldn't find one I liked. And then I went to bed. And then I shot up in bed thinking, do you know what? I think I have a Victorian nighty in storage under my bed. So I got up thinking, am I dreaming this? Looked under my bed, and guys, lo and behold, she has a Victorian nighty.
Oh my God, it's Bridgerton.
Oh my God.
It looks like it hasn't been washed since Victorian times.
That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. But see, for me, I'm a Clueless fanatic. I love Cher. The digitized closet was like a dream of mine. But for me, I love going to carnivals around the world, mostly Trinidad, because like that's where I'm from. And what I do, I always put all of my outfits in collages. I put every item I own and I put them in collages to see what I'm going to wear. All these different things. So I really love funky prints, all these different things. But my problem is I have way too many clothes. So I need to like, you know, put them in collages. And also I'm a very organized person. Every spring, summer, fall, winter, I go in my closet, organize it by color, and that's how I go. I need to. It's my sanity.
Wow, that's beautiful. Here's Thank the thing. I'm not... No, you're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. That outfit, Thanks. Whoa. you have reason to do what you do. I, however, a little more disorganized. And the thing for me is, if I have some big events, yes, I'll plan it out. I might even take a little picture or whatnot. But after, I'm going to plan ahead for 2 days. On the third day, all hell breaks loose and an atomic bomb will go off in my closet. Because what I picked a week ago, I might not feel that feeling. I might not fit the way I fit a week ago. I might want to wear something totally different or have to wear something totally different. So I'm not going to force myself into what a computer picked for me when my own body is saying, oh, no, honey, we're not wearing this today. We're wearing something else.
Gemini and Juana, I want to just thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real treat.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.